On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Neither party's agenda really aligns with who its coalition is today.
It was the dumbest speech I have ever seen in my life of covering politics.
When people walk into a voting booth, at the end of the day, they do say, I really should vote for someone smarter than me.
I'm Warren Altney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You may know one of my guests, Dave Navarro, from his other world. Maybe doing a little bit of television. I mentioned to him when we were sitting down, Jabberjaw.
Old days.
That's right. What we used to call a 20th century. Many of us know him, of course, from the band Jane's Addiction and from many other bands. And the band got back together again recently. Was it 5 years ago now?
I think it was in 2009.
Almost 10 years ago.
It's flying by, right?
We're here to talk about a documentary that he's part of with the film's director, Todd Newman. First of all, Todd, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
It's an amazing film. It's an incredible document. And I was just talking to you beforehand, Todd, and you said that it basically has been 7 years in the making?
Yeah, from the inception up until completion was pretty much about 7 years. A lot of figuring out which path to take and just documenting stuff and seeing how to tell this, you know, incredible story. It was quite a journey. I mean, we cut the entire thing in my back house, yeah. You know, so it was pretty much a do-it-yourself. We didn't have any funding. We paid for everything ourselves. We didn't have a crew. It was just pretty much Dave and I making this film.
Yeah, the interesting thing, Elvis, is that Todd and I have been longtime friends. And
when did you meet?
We met about 15, 16 years ago.
Yeah, about.
Just through mutual circumstance. And we're both cinephiles. In fact, if there was an art form that I gravitate to most for my personal escapism and entertainment, it's film.
We can tell from basically the characters you do on stage, kind of the way you look, and the thing. There's so many of those are movie references.
There is, yes. And there's, I mean, it's no mistake that in the 90s, I used to have Godfather 1 and 2 playing on a screen on my amplifier every single night for a tour, but that's a whole nother story. I didn't play 3. I'll go on record as saying right. that. But we got together. We are such fanatics of film. We wanted to make a film. And we didn't know what to do. Were we going to go scripted? Were we going to go short? Were we going to go documentary? And we just decided to stick with something that we knew inside and out, or that we thought we knew inside and out, which was this tale of my mom's murder. And so we embarked upon a journey to tell this story in a documentary form. But we didn't really know what we were doing. We didn't really have feature-length film experience of any kind. And we just kind of got up one day and started making a movie.
First, talk about where the title comes from and the title of the film.
Well, Morning Sun actually is a title of a song that Dave recorded years ago. And I just thought it would be shameful not to call it that, because that's exactly what it is.
But when I saw the title, I thought, well, that's interesting, because that's really making the story very personal and talking about exactly
Absolutely.
The impact of that event on your songwriting life, isn't it, Dave?
True. And also, I mean, obviously there's a pun, self-contained pun, which is the morning sun, the next day sun, which is the rebirth after a night of trauma. So that's kind of the duality in the title. It went with the song in a perfect sense. And I kind of fought Todd on the title because I didn't want to do
You don't want to be too self-referential?
Clever,
is that
yeah,
what it
too,
was?
Too self-referential and too clever and too cute. But at the end of the day, there was no better option. I mean, it really fit the story. And as we got into the story and told the story and came to realize that there was like this rebirth in the light at the end of the project, which we didn't anticipate, then it made perfect sense.
I think it's so fascinating about this because you somehow think of somebody – I'm not going to say like you, mm-hmm. Dave, who lives your life in a very public way, and all of your addictions are something you never shied away from making public in the past.
Sure,
in fact, Jane's Addiction was almost like this kind of magnet that drew addicts together for a long time.
It was our calling card for a long time.
Yeah. So the idea of explaining where they came from in such a personal way, in such a profoundly personal way, how long did it take you to decide you were going to use this film as a way to sort of exercise some of that?
It's interesting because we didn't really set out with a plan, which I think other than making the film and telling the story, at first we were intending upon telling a crime narrative in a, you know, a true crime sense. It wasn't until we got deeper into it that we let the film and the process dictate which way it was going to go. And it wasn't until we were deep in it that I found that the more exposure I gave to the film, the more impact it had in terms of hopefully being a voice for others. And like I said, we didn't set out to try and speak to sufferers from domestic violence. We didn't set out to speak to drug addicts. We didn't set out to be a voice for anybody. And through the process of the filmmaking and taking our time with it, these options presented themselves to us. And so we really found ourselves exploring that. And because it was just the two of us, and because we weren't working with a manager or an agent or a company or a distribution outlet or anything like that, it was just the two of us, we had complete control. So it was very, very safe for me to go down those roads.
It's a treat. I'm talking to the men behind the new film, Morning Sun, Dave Navarro, who's the subject, and Todd Newman, the director. And Todd, I guess I want to ask you, too, as Dave was talking about this cinephilia you guys both have, the fact that so much of his early life, I mean, we see so much of his mom in through popular culture. I mean, you know, through those films and through those photographs. Mm-hmm. It almost, weirdly, that part of the story almost lends itself to this kind of storytelling, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the fact that she had, that she was a model and an actress and stuff like that. That was a lucky shot, to be honest. I mean, that we had a treasure trove of amazing film and amazing commercial reel and amazing pictures and to really give a sense of who this woman was. I mean, that's also very supported by the people that speak of her in the film, but that was luck, basically. I mean, in the sense that we had that and we tried to make it an homage to who this woman really was, you know.
It was interesting because I didn't have any of that stuff, any of that archived footage. I kind of had to dig for it and reach out to family members.
Where was it? Where'd you find it?
My father had some of it. My uncle had some of it.
So you didn't grow up with that stuff?
I mean, I was aware of her work and I'd seen some of it growing up, but I hadn't seen the majority of that material for over 20 years.
What was that culling process like for you, pulling all that stuff together and looking at all that footage?
It was more beautiful and awe-inspiring than it was sad. Because, you know, when you deal with trauma like this, and not to get too, you know, self-help oriented here, but for a lot of trauma survivors, the event of a traumatic episode is what we remember. And that becomes the focus of our relationship with whoever the traumatic event happened around. Whereas to go back and look at this stuff that I hadn't seen opened up a door of memory that was prior to the event that was really beautiful. Todd and I sat on the floor going through tons and tons of photos and just looking at how beautiful she was. And I was remembering all these really wonderful things about her that I hadn't looked at for a long time. Because in terms of surviving trauma, a lot of times if the victim opens the door to certain memories, they also open the door to the tragedy, which finds its way into a physical manifestation. So we tend to protect ourselves and lock all of it away. So but this gave me the opportunity to look at portions of it that I hadn't looked at in a long time. And like I said, in a safe environment and feeling, you know, very supported by Todd and just having a new perspective as an adult man.
I guess, Todd, it's the point where because there's a sequence that you use to really build tension. And we should talk about the traumatic event that the movie deals with here. Right.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the editing of that, for sure. I mean, it was purposeful that I wanted to create an environment where it was frenetic because, again, I can only imagine what he went through.
You say we're talking about the murder of Dave's mom.
Yeah, the murder of Dave's mom and the night of.
Because the film is really interesting. It's almost like the first 15 minutes or so is almost like Neil Young, you know, the Neil and the damage done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then there's this recollection, you know, the film sort of takes a deep breath as everybody talks about your mother. Mm-hmm. And then it moves into the section I'm talking about where it becomes really, it's a series of almost like musical vignettes where the rhythms change from section to section.
Yeah, that was very purposeful. And
it was like Rite of Spring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I mean, that was purposeful to push the if you can't imagine what it was like for this person going through this, him being the main character in the film at that point, what it was like for him and everyone around him, that was my intention of that kind of machine gun firing from different points of view, you know?
Which also I think speaks to very well how the family felt at the time, because our heads were swirling with pieces of information that were clashing and bashing into each other and cutting each other off. And I think the choice that was made in the edit there in terms of telling the tale of the night of the murder really is a great visual explanation of how that felt. When I watched that portion of the film, it takes me back to that night.
And also, I think the crowning achievement of that section is the fact that once the event has unfolded, we realize the story's not over. Mm-hmm. And it also sort of gives, it's kind of the end, being a little prosaic here, the end of the first act, but it also sort of gives us that sort of momentum to keep involved in the story.
Right. You're beating people over the head with the information, but we had to give little breaths here and there because I knew there was more to come. And it's like you don't want someone to also shut down because it's just too much and it's too heavy. But one thing also is a lot of the information in those scenes, based on the question that you asked Dave earlier about looking at pictures and finding all that treasure trove of stuff, there was a lot of information on the criminal side that Dave was not aware of yet that we discovered throughout the making of the documentary. And that was a process that he and I had to work out of, you know, again, the trust thing that Dave is talking about. But a lot of times I would learn things about the case that I knew he didn't know yet.
For example, what was one of those pieces of information?
I mean, there was everything from the fact that this guy had a bunch of different aliases or the names of people that he threatened, or, you know, instances where it was clear-cut premeditation, you know, where there's evidence in courtroom document of him telling somebody else he was going to kill my mother and my aunt. So there were, you know, nothing that was as earth-shattering as the crime itself. But yeah, it was just to learn those little pieces of information throughout the course of this really lent itself to it being a real, real story. You know, and as a filmmaker, as part of this process, you know, it was things of that nature that allowed me to at times step back from it and look at it as a filmmaker and as a creative mind rather than the subject of the film. Because I was able to step out of it. There were certain days I was not able to step out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there were certain days where it was just so emotionally fueled, I couldn't handle being a part of the edit or the process. And then there were other days where I felt, you know, as the human condition is, it's up and down and all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, we're never feeling the same way from day to day. And, you know, my aspects of creative process aren't the same from day to day.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Todd, because again, for me, it's a series of vignettes that adds up into a big story. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, because you're talking about building this thing over the course of 7 years, when you just figured out that was the best way to do it, because each vignette is a weird way kind of emotionally self-contained.
Yes, absolutely. There were times that, you know, I had poster boards all over my room and trying to puzzle piece. Can we weave this into that? Can we weave that? And I ultimately decided that we decided that the best way would be to keep it in these self-contained kind of vignettes with a little massaging tool in between, kind of to get you a palate cleanser almost, to get you in the mood for what we were going to show you next. Although it's a very linear story, it seems so compartmentalized, all the different facets of it to me, so I kind of wanted to keep it that way in a weird way, you know.
But we also did put the drive to the San Quentin as a thread that ran throughout to kind of weave the different vignettes together so they had a cohesive narrative.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a break. We're going to talk more about this incredible new film. It's The Morning Sun. It's director Todd Newman. It's subject, Dave Navarro is here. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Listen to KCRW's music stream, Eclectic 24, for hand-picked music around the clock. You can find all of KCRW's produced content on our app. Download for free at kcrw.com/apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm happy to have here the men behind the film Morning Sun. It's director Todd Newman and its subject, Dave Navarro. I guess I was thinking about this, too, because so much of this is about the way in which you were shaped, Dave. And you, as we're first hearing about this, there's a cut to you getting a tattoo. And it's almost like it's almost like the cliche of somebody getting scarification tattooed to deal with trauma, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a multitude of facets to this that I guess would fall into that cliche category, but, you know, at the same time, there's also an element of homage, you know, because I would say that in order to deal with the trauma, the more cliche move that I went down was the drug addiction. Do you know what I'm saying? And in terms of, you know, I'm just a fan of tattooing anyway, so getting a tattoo of my mother made perfect sense.
Sure. But I mean, but if you were getting a tattoo in the 80s or the 90s, it meant something very different than what it means now.
Absolutely. And the story did reveal itself to be about learning to deal with pain and trauma. And I think that one of the things that we tried to show, I mean, there's the body suspension, there's the drug addiction, there's the bloodletting, there's the tattooing, there's all these, addiction. You know,
it starts off with blood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Literally, I mean, that first, and let's talk about that very first image over the opening. Let's tell me a little bit about that, Tom.
We're fortunate to be friendly with a couple that's artists. They're body modification artists, and they do these live shows. Their names
also, are... Also, even before we see them, that very first splash of red, that could be almost be like blood going into a syringe or something.
That actually was the last thing that I shot.
No kidding.
That was, to be honest, we had very simple titles over black, and I just felt like I wanted something a little more to get us into this mind frame. The thing that you see over the titles, I use basically a fish tank and put drops in there to help my brother, who I said, you got to come over here. I got to change something at the last minute. And we put a little white background, a little felt background, and dropped it and just filmed it a bunch of different ways. But the text that you see, there's a sketch basically that you see different components of, and then it all comes together as... At one time, very early on, Dave was trying to explain to me the layout of his mom's apartment, of where his home, basically. So he had crudely drawn a sketch of mom's room, my room, that kind of thing. And it had gotten lost in the shuffle, and I was lucky enough to be going through some old stuff, kind of seeing if there was any loose ends, and I found it. And I said, this would be perfect to put over that thing that I just shot. So I toyed with it, and that's where that came from. I don't know if that was me trying to make some statement or me just trying to make something look a lot cooler, to be honest, you know what I mean, than what we had at the time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to read too much into this.
It makes sense. That's what it came away with. But my motivation to do it was I want something a little snappier to bring us into this film.
But you know what it does for me? And, you know, we initially had a cross between, like, Vienna Secession lettering and your typical Woody Allen film font. Well, it wasn't the font, but it was the, you know, just the white text on black, which was, you know, initially like what we went with. But what I love about the title sequence that we have now, which is so simple, to me, it reminds me of the Werner Herzog Nosferatu opening, which is just so slow and deliberate and ominous and compelling.
And it's black and white and with a splash of color. So it's like you think this is what you think is happening. And then, but there's the blood sort of represents the emotional impact.
Yes. Right, so absolutely.
It just spoke to, and then it lends right into the opening scene, which is a bloodletting scene. And, you know, it's pretty cohesive and beautiful.
What's interesting too, though, and I wonder what it's like to shoot this, Todd, and I want you to respond, Dave, is hearing people talk about your subject like this, and then somebody who's so intimately involved with the movie, hearing these points of view about him in the film.
Well, I mean, a lot of it I know about him, even if he doesn't think it about himself, if that makes any sense. A lot of the things that people were saying, friends and family. And for many of them, you can tell that he's in the room at times with certain subjects that are being interviewed. And that was more of a case of if it would be easier for them to talk straight to him, I thought that there might be something there that's a little different. And then there were certain people that I felt, I want to talk to this person without him there, without the distraction of him being there, or to kind of save that authenticity, you know. And the reaction that I would have, because we are such good friends, is, and I say it in the film at one point when I'm talking about reading court documents, is, you know, I can't believe all this happened to him. Like, he can sit and tell
me. That's
what
I'm asking you, that, because you're hearing about him before you knew him.
Yeah, you're absolutely
hearing about basically another person.
Another person, yeah. Another person and a child. I mean, granted, 15 maybe, to me, is still a child in that sense, emotionally. And sure, I've heard the story. Sure, he's told me the entire linear part of the story. But when I really sit and think about it, it's very, very difficult and impactful to realize, you know, be smacked in the face with the realization of what really happened to this guy, who happens to be my best friend now, you know. And I really don't think until the film was actually released, it was always in the back of my mind that we could scrap this at any time if it's doing too much damage. And I mean that.
Was that really a consideration?
Absolutely.
For you too?
I think that's one of the elements that allowed us to move forward with it as far as we did, is the knowledge that if this doesn't feel good, we're not doing it. And the intention here was to essentially, before we got too deep into it, the intention here was to learn how to make a film. I mean, it was literally...
With this risky a subject.
Yeah. Like I said, it was literally a phone call between us at like maybe 2 a.m, like, hey, let's make this movie. How about this murder of my mom? Sure. Let's start it. And we just grabbed cameras and got going and learned how to do it in the process. But I think because of the fact that there wasn't anybody else involved, it provided a safe environment that we could delve as deep as we wanted and go as far as we want. And all the while knowing we don't owe anybody a release of anything.
Or a crew of people depending
upon us. Standing
there,
people I don't know, standing there with cameras and lights. Like, no, that's not going to happen.
Wow. It's the treatment, really. My guest, the man responsible for the new film, Morning Sun, it's...
Why is that reaction? I'm curious what you're...
Because the idea that you thought, well, you know what? Let's just make this thing about this horrible subject and see where it takes us. You know, we've been talking about making all kinds of things.
Oh, sure, sure.
Let's do the thing that might be the thing you might want to, like, wait a couple of years to do.
Well,
maybe
try
out a couple of things first. You know, maybe work on some opening credits for
high.
Some other movie.
Yeah, we aim high.
Anyway, the guys behind this and this immensely realized project are its subject, Dave Navarro, and the director, Todd Newman. But I guess I'm saying this, too, because part of this is that you say this, and it's one thing in the abstraction to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And even you think you realize as you're talking, well, you know, it's kind of a big deal, but let's, you know, we know each other. But then not only making this film about this enormously impactful subject,
mm-hmm.
but you're also getting to know this all again, because you're a pretty public personality, Dave.
Sure,
but
sure.
The idea of exposing family to the public like this mm-hmm. is something that, in the seeing of it, must have had an incredible, profound impact on you, too.
Sure.
And affected in ways you didn't expect to be affected by it.
Of course, of course. And I think in a lot of ways it forced me to accept and move through some of the aftermath of this subject as a fully grown adult man. Because to be honest with you, I went through it as a child and learned whatever coping mechanisms I had as a child.
And then anesthetized yourself for a long time about it, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think that moving through this, and like I said, not really having any pressure to owe anybody anything, really allowed me to explore myself and the subject. And, you know, believe me, I don't recommend this, that everybody does something like this. I mean, there was therapy. There was, you know, a lot of internal work that had to be done. You know, I mean, this isn't something that you just kind of do and hope for the best. You know, I was guided quite a bit. But I think to deal with this subject matter as an adult male really helped me make a lot of peace with a lot of what I had probably tried to deal with as a child and a young adult.
I mean, for you, the idea of taking this material and molding into a film at the same time, maintaining this relationship, I mean, that's juggling a lot too, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
You could almost make a movie about what it took to make
this
movie.
Oh, you have no idea.
We almost made that part of the movie.
Yeah, well, you have no idea how many times that's been said of, we should be rolling on this, we should be rolling on this, because the dynamic between us and the outside world and him in the outside world and me viewing him in the outside, it was mind-boggling at times. And I think it's a testament to just the trust. And what Dave said earlier, again, I'll reiterate, is because we had complete control, there was, if this gets too heavy or if it starts coming between us or if it starts becoming traumatic in a way that we can't get our arms around it, we can stop doing
it. It's one thing to say that, but neither you could actually believe you could somehow like pull back the launch codes and prevent the strike.
Well, I could lie to myself.
Exactly.
I wouldn't believe it, but I could lie to myself.
I think that what we're saying is we're both very much aware that nothing is happening until we're making it happen. So we're safe until the day this thing drops online or in the theater or wherever. And even driving up to San Quentin, I'm totally okay until I walk through the door. And you have control over those things. And, you know, I think it's a lot of keeping the now in perspective.
Yeah, and I think
staying in the here and now.
To be honest, the release of it was messy. The coming upon, this is going to be seen by other people than us or, you know, close loved ones that I've shown it to.
What was that first public screening like with not just people you know? What was that like?
Actually, interesting thing is the first screening was a family and friends screening, which was good and supportive, and people were very, you know, complimentary about it. And I think a little maybe uncomfortable because, you know, then, you know, what do you say to someone like that? You know, but the first public screening that we had was amazing to see people react and be moved, and other trauma survivors and other survivors of domestic violence be moved and feel not alone and be brought to tears and have that kind of a reaction was really powerful for us. And I think more positive for me than the friends and family screening.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things at the friends and family screening, when we introduced the film, David said, just so you know, I'm okay. Don't come up to me after and, are you okay? Are you okay? And because that was a concern too, is everybody going to just blast him with, oh my God, are you okay? And it's, you know, this is 30 years and a lot of work and a film and attempts at music, to make music about it, and a lot of other artistic attempts to reconcile with this somehow. So there was that facet to it for sure. But something that you said a little while ago actually triggered something with me as far as being as an artist. You know, did you really think that, you know, you would not do this or that you weren't going to complete this thing? And I think to answer an even earlier question, the reason why we would think that it was okay to even tackle this subject matter is because we're weirdly tortured artists, you know? I think that is something where we'll say, well, we were just being stupid and we just didn't think it was going to be so impactful. I think you are probably right that we probably knew in the back of our minds where this was going to take us. If we're going to do it, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, let's make the canvas big.
Not where,
let's get messy.
But not where it's going to take you, but that you were going to go where it took you.
Where it took us.
He brought up something interesting, too, because I don't know what it's like to create anything that I'm not tortured over. what I mean? So this is the ultimate example of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're really getting it out of us, man.
Well, I'm sorry. I got it all out of you because we're out of time. Well, got to thank you guys. My guest, one of whom should know better than beat a table when something's being recorded, is Dave Navarro, who's the subject of the film Morning Sun. The director, Tottenham, is also here. Guys, thanks so much for doing this.
Elvis, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having
us. My pleasure. Let me thank some people here. Thank Patrick here at NPR. Blake Veit, who edits the show and associate producer. Also, thank Kat Yor, who mixes the show. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Wow, it's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.